Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Blake Bedingfield in studio with us coming up in about 15 minutes. Right now, John Feinstein joins us. Always enjoy the national perspective and international today. Time to talk a little Ryder Cup. John, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Most of us didn't get to see much of the Ryder Cup, which probably was a good thing because it didn't go very well. Let's start broadly. Just, what's the disaster level of the performance over there in Paris?
Well, very high, Paul, because I think the Americans were convinced that they had solved the Ryder Cup riddle after Hazeltine. They had this task force, and they brought Davis Love back as the captain. He pressed all the right buttons, and they won pretty easily, 17-11. What they forgot was that Europe had one of its weakest teams in years. They had six rookies on that team, none of whom, by the way, made the team in 2018. So it's not like they were a bunch of great players who were developing and playing for the first time, like, say, Justin Thomas this year as a rookie, or Tommy Fleetwood on the other side as a rookie. And the golf course is always set up to the home team's advantage. In this case, at Hazeltine, it was wide fairways, low rough, fast greens. Now you get to Paris, narrow fairways, high rough, lots of water, slower greens, which is the way the Europeans like it set up. And I think hubris got involved. They just said, hey, we've got nine major champions on our team. Tiger Woods is back being Tiger Woods. You know, Phil Mickelson was a hero in 2016. We're going to go over there, even though the U.S. hasn't won in Europe since 1993, and kick their butts. But you got to understand, for the Europeans, the Ryder Cup is truly a big, big, big deal. Has been for a long time. And they didn't like losing in 2016. You know, Rory McIlroy told me that losing that Ryder Cup, even though he loves playing the Ryder Cup, was one of his worst experiences in golf, that he hated losing because he'd been on three winning teams prior to that. And I think the Europeans went in with the attitude, okay, we took the loss at Hazeltine. They're not coming into our home ground and beating us. And they whipped them from Friday afternoon on. There was clearly dissension within the U.S. team. There is none within the European team. And now the U.S. has to get back to the notion that winning the Ryder Cup is hard. You know, Phil Mickelson, on the Saturday night at Hazeltine, handed out dog tags to each player that just said beginning on it. And his point was, this is just the beginning. We're going to dominate the Ryder Cup from here on. They're never going to dominate the Ryder Cup. The Ryder Cup should not be dominated by either side.
So Patrick Reed is not afraid to speak his mind.
Nope.
We knew that going in. He did an interview moments after with the New York Times, and he ripped Jordan Spieth. He ripped Jim Furyk. And the line that really stuck out to me, John, was, every day I saw leave your egos at the door. And guess what? The Europeans do that better than us. And he blamed Jordan Spieth for basically picking his teammate throughout. What did you think of his comments?
Well, let me say this. Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas are very good friends. And they went 3-1 together. So you can't really knock Furyk for putting the two of them together. They wanted to play together. Reed and Spieth were a very good team in 2014 and in 2016. But they're not that close at all. And you might remember the incident earlier this year where Reed was denied a drop on a Sunday during a tournament, and his comment to the rules official was, if I was Jordan Spieth, you'd be giving me this drop. And that, you know, that kind of makes it clear that he sees Jordan as being the golden boy, which he is, and he's not. He's sort of the black sheep. So I think what Furyk was trying to do was say, okay, I can take Spieth and Thomas, and they're going to be get along and play well together, which they did. And then he was hoping that he could take Reed and Tiger Woods, and that Reed's emotion would carry Tiger Woods and get him emotionally involved in a Ryder Cup, which has been a problem for him as a player in the past. Well, Reed didn't play well, and Woods ended up walking around for 3 days looking like a zombie. So that part backfired. But I think what Jim did was legitimate. I understand why Reed was frustrated, A, because he didn't play well, and B, because the team lost. But you're right. I mean, Patrick Reed always expresses his opinions. And you know what happens when a team loses? All of a sudden, they're not such close friends. And Ian Poulter, when I was researching the first major, said to me, look, there are guys in our team room who don't get along that well. There are guys, you know, there are differences, guys who don't like each other. But for 1 week, we leave all that outside that room. And the way he put it was, and then when the week is over, we go back to thinking Monty's a jerk. Because none of them ever liked Colin Montgomery, but Colin Montgomery was a great Ryder Cup player. And that does make a difference, I think, that the Europeans put their differences aside. The Americans tend to let them simmer, especially when they're losing.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
How do you fight that? How do you fight the simmering? Why aren't they able to put it aside? And does that say something about, more broadly than about that group of guys, maybe about American sporting psyche?
Well, I think did I use the word hubris already, Paul?
Yeah.
I think that's part of it. Like, well, it doesn't matter, you know. One of the reasons they won in 2016, besides what I already mentioned, was that they did actually genuinely get along even before they went to Hazeltine. I remember sending an email to Julius Mason, who's been the PGA of America's PR guy for 150 years, after the PGA. Because when Jimmy Walker, who was on that team, won, Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas, who ended up not being on the team, but all three of those guys waited for Walker coming off of 18 to congratulate him. And there was a genuine closeness in that team room. Now, some of it came from Davis Love because Furyk's well-liked, but nobody's better liked in golf on either side of the Atlantic than Davis Love. And the players wanted to make it up to him for losing in 2012. Plus, you had Brant Snedeker on that team, who everybody loves. You had Matt Kuchar on that team, who everybody loves. This was a different team. Tiger Woods was a player, not a vice captain. And so the mentality, I think, in the room was definitely different. And, Paul, I don't know that there's one answer to how you combat that. I think Steve Stricker will be the captain in 2020. He's very well liked by the players, and he's going to have to find a way to get to them beforehand, not when they get there, and say, hey, fellas, if we don't get ourselves together here, we're going to get our butts kicked at home. And the one other thing, and when I go going back to my hubris comment, only one American player, Justin Thomas, went and played the French Open in June, which was held on the same golf course the Ryder Cup was played on. And Furyk said, well, a bunch of guys came over and played practice rounds. Yeah, well, five other guys did. If you really understand that this is a different golf course, a different setup, and a different challenge, why weren't all 12 of them over there playing four competitive rounds to get a feel for what that golf course was like? A practice round's totally different. Golf course is set up different. The feelings are different when you're not competing. And that was part of the hubris I'm talking about. They didn't feel they needed to go over there and figure out the golf course.
John, what an incredible couple days for the Cubs and the Rockies. Just looking at the close of both their seasons, the Cubs sort of go down to tie for the division. The Rockies play really well to tie the Dodgers. But losing that game and then the very next day playing another game that's now for your lives in the postseason. What do you think about this setup and what this season produced with those two basic play-in games?
Yeah, it's awfully tough to play a game, add a game that's that important, because it is. You know, it's not like you can just say, well, we're in postseason, we'll blow it off, because if you lose, you got to play the one game, win or go home game, either the next day in this case, because it was both National League games. I think it's good that both the Cubs and the Rockies did both play. And that makes it a little fairer, but the Rockies still had to travel from Los Angeles to Chicago and tee it up again tonight. So that's really rough. And I understand, I like the idea, Chad, of not breaking a tie with some, you know, mathematical formula or what your record is in the division or whatever it might be. I like the idea. Let's go on the field and play this out. But I also think it's very tough on the two, in this case, the two teams that lose. It would have been even worse if one team had played and the other one hadn't and then had to play again the next day. And it's going to be rough on whoever wins that game, the Rockies or Cubs, to then turn around and have to open the playoffs 2 days later.
John Feinstein normally joins us each Monday. John, thank you for the time change this week, and we look forward to an extended visit next Monday.
I will, too. Thanks, Jonathan. Okay. Talk to you guys then.
Yep, John Feinstein with us Mondays at 12:15.